Hi, everybody. I'm Patrick McEnroe, and this is Holding Court.
Thanks to Raya Eyewear for sponsoring this episode of Holding Court. I've been wearing Raya since last year. During the pandemic, I started teaching more lessons than ever before, especially outside. Raya are by far the best sunglasses for tennis I've ever used. Check them out at RayaEyewear.com. That's R-I-A Eyewear.com and use the code Patrick to get $20 off your first pair. They are total game changers.
All right, everyone, time for a little Laver Cup redux, I guess you call it, thoughts on Laver Cup. Just here at our tennis academy back in New York with all the kids, and, you know, I'm going to give them the message that I gave. I'm going to give you the message that I gave to all of them just out on the court, and these are kids from a sort of young age, good level, recreational level, then our top kids who are, you know, serious tournament players, going to play high level Division One, maybe a couple with a chance to play the pros, but for the most part, really, you know, very good junior players. And I said, listen, I said, you go out there at whatever level you're at, even at the level of the very best. Obviously, I'm the coach, understand that. And sometimes you get your ass kicked, and that's just what happens. And you got to bear it, you got to deal with it. You got to keep your head up high. So I try to find a message in all the experiences that I have, whether it's commentating over the last 25 years, obviously coaching the Davis Cup for 10 years, now being part of the Laver Cup, my years playing, which are way back then, which I don't think most of the kids really care about. But, you know, once in a while I'll tell them a story or two about that. But for the most part, I try to bring something back that they can hopefully relate to, because all these kids are going to go out there and compete at whatever level. Some of them are going to play on their high school team. Some are going to play Eastern tennis here in the New York area where I live. Some of them are going to go on and play a high-level junior tennis and ITFs. And we even had a few kids that played in the U.S. Open Juniors. So, you know, basically whatever level you're at, you're going to get your ass kicked sometimes. And that's the beauty of sport. That's the agony of sport. You know, they used to call it the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. And tennis is like any other sport, but different in some ways because it's so individual, right? You're out there on your own, and I think that's one of the tricky situations we deal with in tennis, because you know, it's hard for kids to get their ass kicked, and you know, when you're on a team, it's a little bit of a different vibe. Not that it's, you blame other players, but you know, you don't take it as hard. And I played a lot of soccer as a kid, played some basketball. I actually played soccer all the way through my high school days, and I didn't even play that much tennis during the soccer season. That's kind of changed in the world we currently live in. But anyway, back to the Laver Cup. As I said, we just got our asses kicked. Europe, you know, too good. I mean, as we know, they've got they had six players all in the top 10. Casper Ruud was their lowest ranked player at 10, and highest ranked player for Team World was Felix Auger-Aliassime at 11, and Denis Shapovalov at 12. And we had we certainly had some chances in quite a few of the matches. Day one, I thought was very important. If we could have gotten a couple wins there, all of a sudden, you know, the match tie breaks on day two, you know, maybe you get a little tension from another side of the court. I think there is a little bit of that. I mean, the truth is we got our asses kicked, so I'm not going to deny that. But I thought Felix Auger-Aliassime played a heck of a match against Berrettini, won the first, had chances to get the break to serve for the match in the second. Berrettini, who, by the way, was here at the Academy yesterday, just a couple days after the Laver Cup, and I had a funny moment with him. I said, you're not allowed back in here, because all these guys came during the U.S. Open to our facility and practice. Anyway, he's a great guy, but he was practicing for a couple of days here before he heads out to California. Anyway, I thought he just played the bigger points in those crucial moments late in that second set, and obviously in the tie break as well, where Felix had a lead a couple times, never a huge lead, but it seemed like he was kind of up throughout most of the breaker. missed a couple of balls that he normally wouldn't miss, I think, but I think the tension of the moment. You know, the thing that impressed me the most about watching Felix in practice during the whole couple of days was he's very professional, really, you know, wants desperately to get better. He's always working on things. Footwork is great. Love the way he kind of moves in and out of the court. To try to take the ball on a little bit earlier. You know, I think he's still trying to figure that out. So I think he almost sometimes, I wouldn't say he gets tight, but he doesn't kind of let it flow a little bit. He's such an amazing athlete, by the way, too. And I actually felt like he moved better in the match, had a little more weight on his shot than Berrettini. Berrettini obviously had slightly bigger serve, a little bit more reliable. And as I recall, late in that tiebreak, he kind of played Berrettini more within himself. You know, Felix made a forehand error, I think, off the first or second shot at 8-all, and then actually played a decent approach to Berrettini's backhand, and Berrettini had been struggling with that shot and maybe didn't quite go after the approach enough, and Berrettini was able to pass him and win that. Diego Schwartzman played a great match, too, against Rublev, had lots of chances to win that in the tiebreak. I think he was up at 1.62. I think Rublev going into that was certainly a solid favorite. But Diego is just an incredible worker and great teammate, and you know, obviously limited with his size in the indoor court. You know, it helps to have that big serve to get you out of some trouble on some big points. So he didn't have that. The other match on day one, I'm trying to remember who our third player was. Was it always Opelka routine is too strong a word, but a lot, you know, the Laver Cup, I think, moment for him the first time, and also the condition was pretty slow. Rude, very impressive. I mean, obviously he's had a great year to be 10 in the world. I haven't seen him play that much in person. I know he had a great run on clay, you know, where he won 3 straight clay court tournaments and some other good results. But he, you know, on a slow hard court, he was rough, very athletic. And Riley, you know, I think Riley tried to play a little too straight ahead. I think Riley needs to develop a little more, you know, change the pace of the ball, play the slice, play it shorty. You know, on a quick court, obviously Riley would be brutal because of his serve, and he hits the ball relatively flat. But the ball wasn't really going through the court, this particular court, because the conditions were a bit slower. So that made it more difficult for Riley once they got into the rallies. But overall, decent performance. But, you know, we squeaked out the doubles on day one. Of course, turned out to be the only match we won on that evening. Just taking a couple sips here. But Isner was on fire in that doubles to win that second set, and then they went on a roll to win the tie break, and you know, he really took that over. Shapovalov was a little edgy in the first set, but then he kind of found his range. Sometimes I think Dennis just goes for shots that he doesn't need to go for. It goes, you know, almost too big on return sometimes and on volleys. But another, he's a great kid and also a guy that, you know, really wants it and seems to be doing all the little things to try to get better. So we got out of there, you know, down 3-1, which is a familiar position we've been in many times. Even 9-3 going into the third day, we've been a couple times and then won a couple matches. So we still had hope, but the bottom line is day two, we just got manhandled. You know, obviously they put their big three out there and Tsitsipas over Kyrgios. That was fairly straightforward. Nick, you know, just hasn't, you know, because of various injuries and I think desire a little bit, not moving as well as he has in the past. You know, he's got so much natural ability, but if you don't keep training it and working out, I think you lose it. And I think he's lost a little bit of his speed out wide. He can still hit the ball big and, you know, almost had a chance to sneak out the second set, but it was fairly routine for Tsitsipas on his serve throughout most of the match until late in the second when Nick was able to create a couple of chances. But Tsitsipas is too solid overall, obviously. Zverev and Isner was a tremendous match, and that was one we could have won. And Isner, you know, he comes to play in the Laver Cup. He loves it. He's a great team guy. You know, he's not afraid to play his tennis, which is just go big and, you know, serve big under pressure, which he does well. And that format is well suited to him because you play two sets and a breaker, and so he doesn't have to worry as much about tiring, which, you know, he normally will against, especially that against that level of player where you're having to work extremely hard, you know, point in, point out, and Zverev certainly makes you do that. So that was one that kind of got away. That was one I thought, well, if we could sneak that one out, you know, maybe John stays hot and we can win the doubles that night when he played with Nick. Certainly they got off to a good start in that one. This was after Medvedev just destroyed Shapovalov. And, you know, it wasn't like Dennis wasn't ready to play. And it was just, this guy just won the U.S. Open, just too good. And 6-4, 6-0 was just an unbelievable performance by Medvedev. And you're going in thinking, well, the court's kind of slow. And some of the guys are saying, well, he's not, you know, he likes the ball a little quicker through the court. And, oh, man, confidence from winning his first major. You could see it. He was just a different, you know, even his demeanor on the practice court throughout the week was amazing, just full of confidence. And he's going to be rough to deal with on any surface. I mean, clay is obviously not a great surface for him.
This episode is being brought to you by Raya Eyewear. Over the last few years, a growing concern of mine has been the long-term effects of overexposure to UV rays from my extended time on court in the sun, you know, following that little yellow ball all over the globe. Well, I was also just tired of squinting on sunny days, but my fear was always that wearing sunglasses to protect my eyes would affect the way I hit the ball. Well, last year, especially during the pandemic last summer, I came across Raya, and I'm so, so glad that I did. Raya is changing the way tennis players see the game and protect their most important performance asset, their vision. All of their eyewear is handcrafted in Italy and built specifically to enhance ball contrast and provide protection from those harmful UV rays. There's no question that they help me see the ball better, they relax my eyes in the sun, and they've become an essential part of my tennis experience. Check them out at RayaEyewear.com. That's RIAEyewear.com. Use the code Patrick to get $20 off your first pair. I promise you will love these sunglasses. This episode of Holding Court is being brought to you by True. That's T-R-U, the lifestyle beverage. Absolutely amazing. Go to drinktrue.com to learn more. I suggest you try out the True Sampler, 30% off with the code Patrick.
The camaraderie on the team was just was awesome during the, you know, we had a couple team dinners where we all went out and John sort of put it on the table for the guys to discuss, you know, the lineup and how to go about that. So they had a lot of input. In fact, you kind of let them in some ways sort of say who was going to play on which day and which match. So John thought that was the right way to go. And, you know, I said, oh, you got to be careful with that because sometimes maybe, you know, we should just make the lineup ourselves. We should obviously ask the players their opinions. But I think John wanted to kind of put the ball in their court this time. And, I mean, to be honest, I think it didn't work. Didn't work out that well, but whether or not whether it's about the lineup or not, basically is not really the case. I mean, their players are at the moment better than our players. And by the way, the other question I get from a lot of people, well, a few questions. Let me jump to was why didn't Sock play? Well, Sock was the alternate coming in. Obviously, he wasn't, you know, although he did play well at the U.S. Open, but he was coming in with some injury issues. Remember, he got injured in the match with Zverev, actually injured going into that one at the Open. So he wasn't 100%. And he told us that, you know, a week or so before that he didn't think he'd even be able to play a match at all. So we discussed, possibly getting him in there. But the other thing that people weren't aware of is once you set your lineup, and the other thing is the Laver Cup makes their financial deals with the players well beforehand, which are related to whether or not you're on the team or as an alternate. So if you just all of a sudden sub Sock in at the last minute, there's a couple things. Number one, it affects what the player who gets thrown kicked off the team makes for the weekend. The other factor is that you can't actually just put Sock in and have him play doubles on that day. You'd have to actually have someone else play doubles because they're trying to protect from that very situation of just having a double specialist come in. Because every player that's on the team, the six players, has to play at least one singles match. So theoretically, I guess, if let's say, for example, I'm just going to throw out a name, you know, Opelka played on day one and he woke up on Saturday and he was sick. We were supposed to play doubles. well, we could probably, you could put a substitute in it. Not probably, you could put a substitute in. Opelka would then be out of the team, and then you, let's say you put Sock in, so Sock wouldn't be able to play doubles that day. You'd have to take someone else from the team. So if, let's say it would have been Opelka Isner, for example, and Opelka wakes up Saturday morning, he says, sick, I can't play, or injured, or whatever it may be, then you would have to play Isner with, you know, Kyrgios or Schwartzman, or, you know, one of the guys that was already on the team. So not quite as easy as people think to just substitute someone in to play doubles. Now, that being said, do I think Sock would have made a difference in doubles? Yes, I do. I actually think he would, you know, the very small margins, especially in those doubles matches, which, you know, pretty much all come down to the tiebreak, I believe he would have made a difference. Now, would it have been enough? Probably not. And would Sock have been able to play a singles match? That wasn't the message we got coming in. So, although the 1 year Sock did win a singles match, I remember against Fognini a few years back, he actually won, which was one of the, maybe the only singles match we won. Maybe we won one more that year. He was a doubles guru for us, but that year was a year he wasn't even ranked. And in singles, because, right, he had some injuries. But anyway, it was good to see Sock back. He looked pretty decent in practice. I don't think he could quite go full out. So that's why we were, even if we could have substituted him in, we were a little nervous about it. I think once the matches got started, I think Jack was like, oh, okay, I think I could play. You know, can I get in? And I'm like, well, you know, it's a little late now. So would it have affected the overall outcome? Probably not, but it would have made it, you know, certainly a little more interesting maybe if we could have won another doubles match. But it wouldn't have helped us in singles. So we lost all the singles matches on those first 2 days. So if we win one more doubles match, okay, instead of it 12-1, it's 9-3. So, or 10-3, whatever the number is. The other thing people want to know is, why is Russia part of Europe and not Asia? So I'm like, well, I guess it could be either. You know, if we had Medvedev and Rublev on the team, for example, that might even things out a little bit. But we kind of joked about that, and a bunch of people have said things to me like that on social media. Obviously, that's way out of my level of important. What's the phrase I'm looking for? My how much money I make. What do you call that? You call that your... that's way beyond my pay grade. There we go. To make that decision. But yeah, it certainly would be nice if we had a couple of those guys on our team. But, you know, the teams get along pretty well. There's always some heated moments that happen on the bench or on the sideline. That's kind of part of the competition. And again, as I said to our kids here at the academy, you know, you get in the arena and you go do battle, and sometimes you win, and sometimes you get your ass kicked. And so you got to deal with it, and you got to move on and try to figure out what you can do better. You know, obviously I'm trying to help the kids when I tell this story. I mean, we got to do better as captain and coach too, and the players have to do better. So a lot of people calling for the head, saying it's get rid of John and Patrick. Well, that'll probably happen at some point. We hope to do it one more year at least in London for next year. As I said in my Instagram post, which many of you responded to, it's just, for me, it's just amazing to be part of the event. It's a great event. It's a great event for tennis, for the players, really love it. One of the kids in our academy here, he's joking with me over the summer. He kept saying, you know, it must be fixed, right? It's gotta be fixed. It always comes down to, you know, the last couple of years came down to the last match or second to last match. It's always super tie breaks. So he was out in the group of our high level boys. And I said, hey, I said, maybe it's not fixed, huh? Because we just got our butts kicked. And now you know that the other years, there was nothing fixed about any of it. And there's a big bonus, by the way, for the players on the winning team. They get a big financial bonus. But look, there's a lot of pride. You're playing in front of, you know, huge crowds. Boston did an amazing job. The Laver Cup team, led by Tony Gottsick, of course, and Team 8, which is the company that he founded along with Roger Federer. And Steve Zaks is a man who runs it day to day, and a huge team of people behind it. Also, I have to give a shout out to Michelle Sheehan, who runs things for our team on a day to day basis. She also, I work with her for many years at Davis Cup. She still works for the USTA, so she comes in and, you know, takes care of all the players. And trust me, there's a lot to take care of when you're dealing with these guys. getting their suits ready, getting them ready for pictures and appearances. So it's a lot kind of squeezed into a short amount of time leading up to the matches. And again, they do a great job. I'm actually just seeing some text messages come through from, we have a group chat of all the team, you know, that we used to set up practice. So Nick Kyrgios has been texting everyone. He's back in Australia already in Brisbane. And he's doing his 2-week quarantine. So the boys are asking him, how's the lockdown room? And he said Uber Eats is pretty solid, but the room, you know, not great. So, but there you go. So that's what you have to do when you go back to Australia. But we wish Nick the best because his mom has been ill, which we didn't know about until, actually didn't know anything about it until I walked into the press conference with him after he lost his singles match. And that's where he kind of dropped the bomb that he wasn't going to play again the rest of the year and even said, this is my last Laver Cup. And the only reason he's saying that is because his ranking has dropped. And this year he was sort of a captain's pick because, you know, he's brought a lot to the event. And he's also won some matches for us, played some great matches with Federer, obviously some great doubles, didn't happen this year. So I would say, you know, he's probably right. It probably will be his last time on Laver Cup unless he turns it around, you know, on the court. Which is certainly possible, but that's for him to decide and him to do the work. But he's a great person and a great team person. He's looking forward to being back in Australia with his family. And, you know, you remember the Australian players are gone have been gone for months and months on end. Ash Barty as well, the Wimbledon champion. So, but all the Australian players are, you know, been gone 4 to 6, 7 months once the Australian Open ended. So they've got to go back to Australia and do a quarantine for, I think, a minimum of 2 weeks in a hotel room with no windows. So that's what Nick is doing as we speak. So we wish him the best. What else were the other questions I got about it? It was just, again, just an eye-opening experience to see how, much work we've got to do, you know, in the rest of the world. But obviously, I specifically think about the U.S. You know, we see two great Canadian players, or, you know, great athletes coming from that country. We could use, you know, those type of athletes in tennis. I think we've got some good guys coming up. You know, Tiafoe, you look at what he's done the last couple of months. He certainly had a great U.S. Open, losing to Felix there. You know, he bring a lot of energy to the Laver Cup, but he's got to continue to, you know, push himself and move forward. Brooksby had that great run in the Open and took a set off Djokovic. He's a guy that certainly attitude-wise would be tailor-made for this event. So, but these guys from Europe, the top guys, they're the best in the world. I mean, this is the bottom line. They've got great athletes playing tennis. And I think that's the biggest thing that's holding us back is because the game's become more physical and athleticism and flexibility and all those things are even more apparent and more important in addition to being just great, having great tennis skill. On the women's side, the ladies' side, we've got, I think, you know, just very generally speaking, better athletes playing tennis at a younger age. So, you know, they're groomed the same way that young American male tennis players are, and we don't have any, you know, some real trouble churning out a lot of super talented young female players as we've seen over the last 10, 15 years. So we need to do better. That's the bottom line. The event itself, as I said, was great. Boston is an awesome town. Love being there. Didn't spend too much time walking around because, once we get to the matches, I'm there from, you know, 9 till midnight. So, again, thanks to the Laver Cup and thanks to everyone that came out in Boston that supported it. It's got a great buzz. People love it. If we had been able to win a couple of matches early, it would have made, you know, Sunday more exciting, more interesting, no doubt about it. But this is sports. I mean, this is why you lace them up. This is why you go out there. You never know what's going to happen. You know, it's great when the Super Bowl's a great game, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's, you know, 45-7 or whatever. It's a blowout. And that can happen in tennis, just like in a major final. You know, sometimes it's 2-2 in the women's final, and sometimes it's not. Even actually, this year was 3-4, and it was a hell of a match at 3-4. So hope everyone enjoyed it. I will be taking a little downtime now from holding court as I revamp and think about season 3. Season 2 has been amazing. So thank you to all my listeners and the support. Please send me messages on Twitter or Instagram about what you think about the podcast. I'd certainly go anywhere and make some comments on Spotify or wherever you do that, Apple, you know, iTunes, as far as a podcast is concerned. But I'd like to hear what you people like, what my fans want to hear about more of in the future, because I got a few ideas about, you know, continue doing what I'm doing, but maybe take it in some slightly different directions as well. So that will be Holding Court Season 3. I'm thinking will come out either later this year or early 2022. All the best from PMAC and Holding Court.
Holding Court with Patrick McEnroe is powered by Mudhouse Media.